It's Mailbag 4, Mailbag with a Vengeance. We're talking about the legacies of Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers if they retire with just one ring apiece, whether or not the Broncos have the quarterbacks to contend in 2017, and just what the Buffalo Bills are doing. Plus, we've got book recommendations and, of course, the latest in sweatpants styles. All that and much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast, powered by digital media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramling.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We continue with the Mailbag series. This is Mailbag 4, Mailbag with a Vengeance. The previous three parts, you should have listened to them all at this point. I assume you did. Otherwise, you just won't be able to pick up the plot lines here. But Andy, two leftovers from last week's show that I wanted to mention real quick. We'd asked folks to tell us, we had the question about players who had gotten new coaches and then broken out. We talked about Lorenzo Alexander a little bit. Gerard wrote in, what do you think of Alex Smith after joining up with Andy Reid? Do you consider that a breakout?
No, not a breakout, because Alex Smith played that way when he had the 49ers and that great defense over there, and it's a running kind of team. And obviously they replaced him with a more talented player in Kaepernick, and it worked out well for them that season. But no, I wouldn't consider Alex. I get the discussion, and I think there's a reason Alex Smith has stayed in the league and Kaepernick has not. And he's a very good fit for Andy Reid's system, but that has not ignited Alex Smith. He is very much a puzzle piece to that system.
And also, I know I heard about this a lot. I don't know if you did. When we talked about the current players who could end up the best ever at their position besides Tom Brady, I think we settled on Gronk was a possibility, as well as someone else who I'm blanking on right now.
J.J. Watt.
We forgot specialists, Andy. Adam Vinatieri, Justin Tucker. I said maybe
okay,
even
sure.
he's not great anymore. He's still all right, but I thought Shane Lechler maybe could go down as the greatest punter of all time.
Agreed. Next question.
All right, let's open this week's mailbag. We're going to have at least one more mailbag show. Next week will be Mailbag 5, Weekend at Mailbags. But we're going to get to all your questions. If you haven't heard them yet, we will get to them. This first one is coming from Mark from Scotland. The CBA is resulting in reduced training time, impacting player development, specifically offensive linemen. However, there is no cap on number of coaches you can spend on. Why are teams not hiring bigger coaching staffs to provide more coaching concurrently within the CBA prescribed training windows? So yeah, the question is basically, why not, you know, there's no cap on coaches, why not hire more coaches, have more guys working with your developmental players?
Because teams don't want to have too many different guys in someone's ear. So you want one voice orchestrating what the wide receivers are doing. Those wide receivers have one teacher, not five teachers who might tell them something a tad different. That was a big – there was a team. I don't remember who it is. I probably am not supposed to say anyway. I kind of remember who it is. But there was a team a few years ago where the players – were just out of their minds because they had two offensive line coaches, and those coaches, unbeknownst to them, were telling them two different things. So you don't need a huge staff. It's handled in teams that, or where there's a big position group like offensive line, where there's probably seven or eight guys on the roster. Almost every one of those teams has an assistant offensive line coach. So I think players are pretty well represented by coaches in the NFL now.
Yeah, you know who really prefers a small staff? Bill Belichick.
He does, yes.
He has said that straight out. I believe he was talking to Paul Rabel, the lacrosse guy, and part of the digital media podcast family here. He was having a conversation about that, about how he wants, I guess the shortened version is you don't want too many cooks in the kitchen here. You don't want too big a sprawling staff. You want a couple guys who do it really well, and those are the guys you're going to trust.
And Belichick thinks differently. He doesn't see the game in terms of positions, from what I understand. He sees it as football players, and you play in a certain area on the field. So Patrick Chung, while you're a safety on paper, that's fine. We need to put something in the media guide. But in our scheme, you're going to be a linebacker. You're going to be a slot corner. You're going to be a high hole safety. And we're not even going to call it those things. We'll probably just tell you you're in this part of the field. You've got this guy. You're guarding that guy. If you think of it in those terms, and it's for one, I think that's a way to build an 11-man unit, continuity. We're all playing areas together rather than here's your position, there's your position, let's go. But then that would also reason you'd have a smaller coaching staff because you're not sectionalizing your team quite as much.
Yeah. Next question here is coming from Sean. And Sean, I'm shortening your question a little bit, but basically he's a Broncos fan and he is frustrated that the Broncos develop these late draft picks and undrafted guys, Malik Jackson, Danny Trevathan, and then they lose them in free agency, which, you know, you can't blame the guy for taking more money elsewhere. But Sean is proposing, let's see, the team that drafted the player can offer a contract above market value, let's say 75% of that contract value, and only 75% of that contract value affects the salary cap. So basically like the Larry Bird rule that the NBA has. You can, if you are trying to retain a guy, you can offer him more money. In this case, in the NFL, since you have the hard cap, that money would not, you know, a portion of that money would not count against the cap. I like the
idea.
I'm not really for complicating the salary cap situation further. I think that's logical, though.
I kind of like it. I imagine it would be harder to do because there's not max contracts in the NFL. There's no ceiling, which makes every contract difficult to categorize because they're all relative to each other. And they're all therefore relative to nothing because there's no ceiling keeping them down. Whereas in the NBA, they're relative to a high point still. So it's certainly easier to do in the NBA. The concept, the idea, I like a lot. I don't think the NFL would ever do it because they have made such an effort and they've had a lot of success with branding free agency and making free agency a big thing. And then look at the NBA this offseason, Gary.
Yeah.
This is the first time in my life I felt a little bit threatened with the NFL's popularity by the NBA because of how big their offseason is. And I know they do have these hard caps. But the point is, in today's world, offseason and player movement, that's its own kind of thing. And that's what's making the NBA popular, and it's going to make the NFL more popular. So you want the Malik Jackson signing with Jacksonville every once in a while. And also, it's not a bad problem to have. Denver's developing their talent really well. They couldn't keep Jackson because they kept Von Miller, the guy they drafted in the first round, and developed really well.
Yeah, I understand the frustration. I mean, look, you get attached to guys, and that's just what you do as a fan. And you can't really... you can't really help it. And I grew up a Steelers fan when all their guys used to, you know, they would let the free agents walk and they draft and develop. And Yancey Thigpen was my favorite player as a kid. And when he signed, I think it was with the Oilers at that point. But he went elsewhere, and it was a little bit broke my poor little heart a little bit.
Yancey Thigpen's one of those guys. He's always like, oh, yeah, Yancey Thigpen. I haven't thought about him in years. And you instantly remember him. There's a handful. He was Carl Pickens is another receiver like that. Remember Carl Pickens? For the Bengals.
I mean, Herman Moore held that receptions record for a while. There's some
I forgot
good
about Herman Moore until I know. Oh, yeah, I saw Herman Moore at the Lions game a few years ago. I'd forgotten about him. I went and told, hey, Peter, Peter King, it's Herman Moore's up there. Because he was the guy when I was a kid, too. You get excited when you see the people from your childhood. We ought to make, like, at some point, not during these mailbag shows, we ought to make an all-time oh-yeah team. Like, who are the guys that were good that get totally forgotten and you go, oh, yeah, when you hear them again?
Yeah. Yeah, like not in the Canton conversation, but maybe been gone for 10, 15 years, that sort of thing. Lou Pellegrino is throwing in Brett Perriman, Darnay Scott, and Terrence Mathis.
I'd like to include more than just Bengals and Lions in the conversation. Terrence Mathis is a good one. Yeah, he was very productive.
Nice.
He had 1,000 yards a few times, if I recall.
He did, absolutely. And no, and those guys were also sort of at the start of the sort of passing game explosion in the 90s there. So,
good point.
If you played fantasy in the 90s, those guys mean something to you. Let's see, we have Fez from Australia here. With the Dallas Cowboys having the most dominant offensive line in the league, has this success been due to luck in drafting talented linesmen, or has it been due to developing these linesmen, or is it due to the right scheme fit for these guys? In light of the fact that guys like Luke Jokel, Greg Robinson, etc., have struggled in the NFL, what have the Cowboys and Bill Callahan done correctly?
Yeah, and Callahan was there the first few years these guys were there. He's now the O-line coach in Washington. I believe it's Frank Pollock is our O-line coach in Dallas now. Mm-hmm. It's all the above to answer that question. Remember when they drafted these guys, Tyron Smith was considered the best athlete at his position in the draft that year, 2011, which is probably the greatest draft of all time, by the way, when you go back and look,
yeah,
especially that first round. So they took kind of the no-brainer there. Everybody applauded the pick. But remember when they got Travis Frederick, people said they reached. And, oh, how can you take him this early? You could have gotten him later. Nobody remembers that now, of course, and that's the way it always goes. And mm-hmm. Zach Martin, Jerry Jones didn't want to take. He wanted Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
And Zach Martin would probably be a better quarterback in the NFL right now than Manziel ever was, too. So they really nailed that pick. This is what's so impressive about how Dallas has built that line. This was an extremely deliberate effort, and it has gone perfectly. And they found guys that not only are great, but complement each other very well, too.
Yeah, and it really is. A team like the Giants around here, they've spent a lot of high picks on offensive linemen, and they just haven't worked out the same way. And, you know, like Andy said, it's a combination of all three things. You got to get the right guy, you got to develop them right, and obviously you want them in the right scheme as well. But, yeah, so a little bit of all of them there. Next question, this is Justin. Seems like every year in the draft, NFL teams lament spread offenses and their spread offenses in college and saying guys aren't ready because of that. Do you see things ever reaching a point where spread offenses become popular in the NFL due to the fact that those offenses are so common now in high school and college?
I think we're there, don't you? I think we see a lot of that stuff in the NFL. It may not be quite as foundational in pro football, and the difference also is in the spreads in pro football. In college, they spread out, and there are a lot of one-read plays, and that's because this gets into all the nuances of how college becomes so different than the NFL. But when you have those hash marks down the middle of the field and you widen them like they do in college, the ball gets on the left hash or right hash, it makes one side of the field so much wider than the other that there are literally geometric plays you can draw up that are one read plays that cannot be defended, that the completion just by the geometry is going to be there every single time. And that's what coaches hate about the spread offense in college, because you don't get that in the NFL, where the hash marks are tighter, the ball's in the middle of the field, so you never have an extremely wide side of the field. It's more balanced. You still have strength to one side of the field or the other, might be because the ball's almost always on the left hash or right hash in the NFL, and coaches make a big deal out of that, but the geometry of the play makes it so you can still cover that, and that's the difference. But Gary, we're still seeing a ton of teams spread out and go plus split formations where the wide receivers are plus or outside the field numbers lined up there. That's how they're playing now. So I think the NFL is a spread offense league. It's different.
Yeah,
field,
it is
though.
A spread
that's
offense
the
league.
Difference.
And you hear all the time, you know, Mike Leach gets very salty about this when people talk about air raid quarterbacks in their transition. And Mike Leach says, you know, look at these offenses. They're borrowing so much from my offense over the last 5 years. But, yeah, it just – I mean, look, it's the geometry of the game. And when you watch college football, you know, you see a lot of things done because the defense isn't as fast and because the spacing on the field is different that you can't do on the NFL level. It's almost like, it's not a smaller field, but it's almost like, take a guy and put him on a field that's only 40 yards wide after he's done in college, and there are just things you can't do as effectively. So that stuff works on the lower levels, and because of that, it's not going away, and it doesn't work as well on the pro level, and maybe someone will come up, maybe someone will crack that nut and figure out a way to make a more, you know, direct transition from college offense to being effective in the NFL, but we haven't seen it. We've just seen pieces.
And I'm fine with all this, by the way. Coaches in college, they get fired too. And so they're going to take those easy completions every time. And if a spread offense gives them that, that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, no one's keeping their job because they produced X amount of NFL prospects that,
correct,
that panned out.
Yep.
Next question. This is Jürgen from Austria. Why do the Patriots play so many bear fronts? What's the advantage or disadvantage of these fronts? Do they still call them bear fronts, Andy?
Yeah, they call them different variations. And I asked Bill Belichick that exact question basically 2 weeks ago at Patriots camp. Mm-hmm. And he said we could be here all day long. And he loves that kind of stuff. And he got into all these different explanations of it. We're going to have an article about it, of course. You don't just go talk to Bill Belichick and then not say anything to people about it, as you can see here. So
yes,
there's a lot of reasons for it. Originally, what Belichick brought up is where it originated. You want to create matchup problems, and it's a great way to get one-on-one matchups from offensive linemen having to block defensive linemen one-on-one. And Buddy Ryan used to do that with Dan Hampton and Reggie White. He wanted to get those guys, Dan Hampton in Chicago, Reggie White in Philadelphia. Buddy Ryan wanted to get those guys one-on-one against the center. The center is almost always the smallest guy on the field in the offensive line, and he's often the least athletic as well, which means he's mm-hmm. the worst lineman. And so they wanted to get that, and that's how it originated. So just take that concept, and again, I agree with Belichick. We could be here all day talking about it, and he would absolutely love to do that sometime. I mean, he loves this stuff. But we can't fill the rest of the show with bare fronts. It is a rising trend in the NFL, especially on passing downs, and we've talked about it with the Houston Texans and how helpful it's been for them. They call it a diamond front, five guys across. It's where Whitney Mercilus is standing up over the center. These are in passing situations.
Yep. All right, hang on 1 second, Andy. Before we move on, a quick word from our friends from ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? It's not easy. This is how ZipRecruiter is different. At ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/things. One more time, if you want to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/THINGS. All right, Andy, back to the mailbag. This is from Kylie. How is it possible the Bills' offensive linemen are not considered elite? According to PFF, Bills are at least top two in yards before contact in all run concepts, regardless of the running back in the game. Left side of the line was also good at pass blocking. Why was Richie Incognito the only player on their line who received any votes in your ranking? And he was, I don't think he made the top 10 anyway. I think he was in that others receiving votes area, but
for our shows,
Andy, I guess I just look at this unit. Incognito has been good since he got there. I don't know if I'd say any of these guys are stars. I think they've been together for a little while and they play really well together is one thing. Eric Wood, Cordy Glenn, they're really good players too.
I called Aaron Cromer, their O-line coach. I called him on Father's Day, absentmindedly, and I asked him about their. And he's now in Los Angeles with the Rams.
Yep.
And I asked him about the Bills' offensive line from last year, and I said, let's just go through, I didn't say this, but he said, let's go through every guy. And we talked about every guy. And every guy is Cordy Glenn, left tackle, Richie Incognito, left guard, Eric Wood at center, John Miller, right guard, and then Jordan Mills, right tackle, and he'll probably be replaced by second-rounder Deion Dawkins soon. And Cromer didn't talk as much about Mills, and there's probably a reason for that. He's probably the limited one of the group. But everyone else, he loved. He said these guys were fantastic. So I think the premise of the question's a good one. I don't know where they're rated in PFF and how PFF would grade that. You have to keep in mind, the Tyrod Taylor factor there. So if they're counting and if they're counting scramble plays as running plays, then of course he's going to go yards before contact because he's running into the open field on a scramble usually. I've always thought scrambles should be counted as passing yard plays, by the way, Gary. They're passing downs. You have pass protection. You're facing pass coverages. You have passing reads. You just happen to run at the end of it all. It's not a whole lot different than dumping it off on a check down and letting the check down guy run. So, and we count check downs as passing stats. But that's a side note. Even on read options, which they do with Taylor at times, you're going to inherently get some more yards before contact built in there as well because you're controlling the defense with deception and spacing rather than trying to power through them with your blockers. All that said, though, I agree. This is a good offensive line. It's a very good offensive line, and it's had a productive running game. And they also will use fullbacks at times in their designs, and that helps too. Mm-hmm.
Well, we will officially give them the seal of approval on being underrated, whatever that might mean. Next question is coming from Thorsten from Germany. What I would love to know is why teams are not just building two run-heavy offenses without a quarterback and wide receivers and just run over the defense. No defense would have enough big players to answer eight big maulers on the offensive line, along with a tight end, a fullback, and a running back. Andy, what do you think? What do you think about the, basically the, I guess this would be like the jumbo package at all times?
It doesn't work because when you go jumbo, the defense goes jumbo, so everything gets condensed, and it becomes hard to grind out 2 or 3 yards. That's one thing. The other is on jumbo offensive lines, the tendency is to think, well, we're just going to put all our big elephants out there and try to stampede over the defense. And there's some of that, but really more what it is when you put more offensive linemen up on the line of scrimmage, you create more running gaps. And so the defense has more run plays or run possibilities to account for. And so you're trying to win by creating more options for your running game. The more variables there are for the defense to account for, if they have an A gap, a B gap, a C gap, but also now a D gap, an E gap, an F gap, or whatever, more chances are something goes wrong and you find a crease. That's kind of the thinking of it. Now, that works both ways too, though. If you're going to go 8 offensive linemen, all it takes is for one of those guys to get beat and your running back's getting tackled. So the antithesis of this idea is to go 5 offensive linemen, spread out, then run the ball. And I've kind of been a proponent of that because you have a fewer chances of blocks breaking down. You have more natural space created for the running back because everybody else is spread out. Defenders go with the receivers when they spread out. So it's a more comfortable middle of the field and run the ball that way. But there's 2 different ways to do it. They're both right. They're both wrong at times. And that's the game coaches play, trying to figure this stuff out.
There you go. And Thorsten is also suggesting have a basically 2 5-man units for offensive line. So your first guys get worn down. You send in your second line offensive unit with a little hockey sub there and keep it going.
They don't sub offensive line. I've always wondered why the NFL doesn't substitute offensive linemen more or rotate them. I believe the main reason is continuity is so critical. So what Thorsten's suggesting here is full line subs, A group, B group, everybody subs at once. And maybe you could do that, but that's 10 roster spots. Most teams can't afford. I mean, that's now you're talking about giving up 5 active roster spots for part-time players, which I guess you do anyway, but you're going to lose some other part-time players. If you have 10 linemen, you take away 3 guys from either linebacker, receiver, cornerback, whatever. Your depth gets hurt, and now your special teams gets hurt when you do that.
Mm-hmm. Next question coming from Lax. And I just want to mention real quick, so Lax left a review for us, and twice in the review referred to me, she referred to you as, as Andy Benoit, but I was referred to as Greg Cassell twice, which...
Wow, that's quite an honor.
I was going to say, accidentally or otherwise, that is the nicest thing anyone has ever said about me. Because if I know a fraction of what Greg knows about football, that means I'm doing something right here. the question here. I gave Mike Tomlin credit for leaving Dick LeBeau alone when he was hired. Pittsburgh still runs zone D over 75% of the time, while LeBeau pretty quickly embraced man coverage, now in Tennessee, of course, and five-man blitzes after leaving. Certain quarterbacks like Brady eat up zone. Would the Steelers' D have been better off sticking with Dick LeBeau as he evolved to man principles, or did Tomlin have more influence on the defense during LeBeau's tenure than I thought, and LeBeau would still be running it if still with the Steelers?
All right, so here's what the question's asking. They're saying Keith Butler replaced Dick LeBeau, and what the question basically says is Keith Butler has continued on with the zone scheme. It's a zone blitz typing scheme that they've always run in Pittsburgh, while Dick LeBeau has gone to Tennessee as their defensive coordinator, and he's continued to blitz, but he's played man coverage behind the blitzes, and he's often played just straight-up man coverage, which is true. He did that a lot last year. That's mm-hmm. now his MO, which is incredible to me. A guy in his late 70s, now early 80s here soon, can just change his philosophy and adapt like that. Butler, let's keep in mind, Butler's said he's going to do more of that this year. They're going to play more man coverage because in that AFC Championship game, they didn't blitz Brady. They figured that New England, because Houston had blitzed them so well the week before, they figured New England was going to be very prepared for blitzes, and so they wanted to put bodies back in coverage and make Brady have to hold the ball. And it did not work. Houston had done that too. They had shown blitz and dropped back and played coverage. Pittsburgh just played straight-up coverage, and they played zone, and Brady picked them apart. Mm-hmm. And now Keith Butler believes, oh, we got to play more man coverage. We can't just play static zone coverage. So I think he'll already kind of do what LeBeau's doing. But I don't want this to imply, and I feel like the question a little bit implies, that Butler has not done as great a job as LeBeau would have done. That Steeler defense last year, they got much better over the second half of the season, and that's a really complex scheme they run. You know that, Gary. We've talked about that a lot. And Butler, to his credit, reduced the scheme early in the year when they had all these rookies and young guys coming in. They simplified, and as the season went on, they added in more and more of their concepts and really carved out an identity. And they were the most improved defense in the AFC in the second half of last season. So what they're doing is working in Pittsburgh. They went to the AFC Championship game. They got their butts handed to them by the greatest quarterback of all time. So now what they're doing is going to continue to expand and add wrinkles, and they want to be able to match up more and do a little bit more of what Dick LeBeau's doing in Tennessee. That's smart. But they're still going to be the Steelers. They're going to play a lot of zone, and they're going to disguise blitzes and do all those things. And I think that's the right thing to do. It's worked very well for them.
Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, they have those young guys. They've invested a couple of high picks in cornerbacks here. So, you know, maybe they start changing things up a little bit going forward. But
smart question, by the way. It was a good question.
Yeah, yeah. This is Luke here, who, by the way, refers to Andy as a young Greg Cosell. So lots of Cosell-related compliments here, which is extremely flattering.
Greg is who I've learned from. That's where I originally learned the game, and I spend every day with him at the Combine when we're around. So I appreciate that very much. He's a guy to aspire to.
There you go. Luke asks, could you guys recommend some books, TV, film, documentaries, etc. that have taught you about the game? Feel free to suggest non-football stuff if that's had a profound impact on you. I would throw out Blood, Sweat, and Chalk, Tim Layden's book, which it teaches you about the game, and you're not necessarily gonna learn about you know, he's not breaking down the offenses of 2016, mostly because the book came out in 2013 or so, but it gives you a really fascinating look at how basically the schemes evolved over the years and why they evolved. And you know, I think there's an impression that the league is very stale when it comes to strategy and stuff like that. But, you know, maybe it's not evolving as quickly as it used to. But, you know, it's a game that's come a long way, the strategies and schemes as well. But that's what I'd throw out there.
Yeah. I read a lot. I probably spend an hour to an hour and a half a day on average over the year reading, and almost zero of that is football stuff, and certainly not football strategy books. They kind of, believe it or not, they kind of bore me. I don't understand it very well when you put X's and O's on paper. I have to see it and have a conversation about it. I know what I'm looking at, but it's not the same. So I'm not a good guy to ask on this. All right. Yeah. or I can live with that, I guess.
We'll find out if that's a compliment.
this is embarrassing as well, but Cosell wrote a book a few years ago with Ron Jaworski. I guess we're going to promote Greg's book now after promoting Greg the man for so many times. But Games That Changed the Game, that is one that does what you just described with Tim Layden's book. So I would recommend that, but that's the extent. I know coaches like the Bill Walsh book. They love it, and apparently there's only like 1,000 in circulation, and so it becomes lore to have one. I did get my hands on it, and I read through it. It's more of a coaching book. I think it's if you want to know how to put together a practice and that kind of thing, coaches like it then. But I was a little surprised how – I'm not going to rip Bill Walsh's book, but there was not what I thought there'd be in there. But those are some you hear about, I guess.
Yeah, the big cliche among college coaches is they all give people, the places you'll go, the Dr. Seuss book.
Do they?
Yeah.
A lot of these football books feel like that to me. Like that's what people say and write. There's not a lot to it sometimes.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go, Luke. There's a couple of books for you to pick up. Let's see, this next question, this is Sam from Brisbane. As a rugby player from Australia and longtime NFL fan, I've never fully understood the use of helmets in American football. In the open field, they seem to be more weapon than protection, but I assume it's different when it comes to line play. Basic question, why do footballers wear helmets when rugby players don't?
I think the question, I agree with the premise. We had this conversation with Robert Klemko on this podcast 3-4 years ago. Robert Klemko played both football and rugby in college. I guess they told him he wasn't healthy enough to play football. So in his words, just to spite them, he went and joined the rugby team, which is kind of the Robert Klemko story, if you know him pretty well. Don't tell him he can't do something. He said it's the face mask that's the problem. It's not the helmet. The face mask is what lets guys feel like they can use the helmet as a weapon, and they all do. And you're even taught, put your face mask on this part of the guy. Put it on that, you know, when you tackle someone, get it right in his sternum or wherever they're teaching kids to tackle now. I think they ought to eliminate face masks in the long run. And it feels counterintuitive, and I'm sure there's a lot more studies that need to be done, and Andy Benoit's opinion is not sufficient for that. But that's where the discussion goes.
Yeah, I mean, there are teams out there that are practicing without helmets to try and take the head out of the game, and certainly that's a big thing on the youth level. I mean, the helmets are there, and I don't know if this is an obvious question because there have been coaches. I remember the late Joe Paterno used to always say, "You want to take some of these hits out of the game, take the helmets off. The helmets are there to keep your skull from cracking." Is the basic answer, but.
As the helmets get better, the guys are going to get more comfortable in them and feel freer using their heads. And what the science is saying now, and we're early in this process, is even a modest use of your head is going to be problematic if you do it repeatedly long term, which is what everybody does when they play football. So I would think if you take the – don't you, Garrett, the face mask is gone. Would you use your head – to hit somebody, your nose is the most extended part of your face now. You run the risk of breaking your nose every time.
I mean, I think the bigger problem is, and look, I've never tackled at a high level here, so I don't want to put my opinion behind it with too much weight, but you want to be looking up at least. At least the face mask gets you, you know, allows you to look up and see what you're hitting. You know, just the speed of the game is gonna mistime some things and hit wrong. I think the problem is the guys who, you know, basically duck their heads and then you're a missile. You're a ram. I don't know if you saw. I'm sure you didn't see this because I'm guessing you weren't watching a whole lot of preseason football so far. Like most people, hopefully. But Trey Sullivan, the Eagles cornerback, took out Dupree, the rookie receiver from LSU for the Packers, on a hit like that, where his head is all the way down. His face is facing the ground as he's just, you know, beelining for Dupree. And it ends up being the top of his helmet in Dupree's ear hole. And I think that's you know, I think face mask or not, I think that's the kind of hit you're still going to get when you basically have a, you know, you have a shell on top of your head.
Yeah. Well, and that's a long process, and we got to move on, I know, but it's a long process. So if they did eliminate face masks, or maybe they put those old Morton Anderson single bar or like two little thin bar face masks, I mean, just something to keep something there, but enough to where you're not using – I think it gets to the subconscious level. If your face isn't protected, you're less inclined to use your head even as a missile driver. But if you do that, I think that's an automatic ejection – automatic suspend. I think that becomes like a death penalty type of offense in football one day if they didn't have face masks. Is any force, any use of the head as a force of the tackling is a real no-no. But we'll see what happens. A lot could happen. Maybe they invent
I'm actually,
a helmet
as much
that
as people
solves
hate
all
the rule,
of this.
I'm all for that targeting rule come to the NFL.
Yeah, no, I am too. Yeah, because all it takes is one Barbara Boxer type of congressperson out there who needs a bunch of votes at the end to say, I'm going to go after the big bad NFL and I'll find a horror story and do that. And that'll be really popular. And I'll get a lot of attention. And now the conversation's in a different platform than what pro football wants it to be in. They need to be proactive.
Yes.
And if they put dresses on the players, that's fine because someone's going to put the dress on the player anyway.
I got to say, I didn't anticipate Barbara Boxer being a part of this podcast this week. But.
Well, and take any politician. I don't know Barbara Boxer. I mean, take any. She has the alliteration for the name, and that's what stood out. Take anyone.
I'll say John McCain. He's big into the sports things. Okay, hang on one second, Andy. Before we move on, a quick word from my friends, your friends, and all our friends from Barbasol. The biggest thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream is also the only thing to happen to Barbasol since shaving cream. Introducing new Barbasol razors. The brand America trusts for a close, comfortable shave now has premium disposable razors. Barbasol's close shave technology on every razor means you get an advanced pivoting head and ultra-thin open flow blades. The Ultra 6 Plus razor also features a seventh blade specifically designed to refine and style tricky areas like under the nose, sideburns, and beard. Visit Barbasol.com and get a $2 savings coupon and see for yourself why Barbasol razors are the number one new disposable razors out there. You're looking good, America. You're shaving with Barbasol. All right, back to the mailbag. All right, next question coming from Sam. What would it take for Drew Brees to be in the discussion as top two or three all time? He has the ring, he has the stats, and then some, and he has helped rebuild the city. What else can he do? I mean, it's going to be tough.
Look, rebuilding the city is probably the most important thing he's done in his career. It's not part of the conversation of where he stands all time, though. We're not. This is an on-field discussion. He needs to win two more, I'd say, two more Super Bowls to be viewed that way.
There's also, I mean, look, they psychologically helped the city. I mean, I don't want to overstate.
No, I'm not dismissing. Of course they did. It was. I'm saying
almost want to dismiss it a little bit. It was important. It was psychologically important to the city, but they had some major problems there for years after. They rebuilt certain parts of the city and very much ignored other parts. But
you're getting political. You now look at
No,
doing
I'm not getting.
Show.
I mean, look, I was down there a couple years later, and it was kind of like, oh, this is not rebuilt at all. This is not what I saw in the commercials.
Yeah,
he'd probably have to win two more Super Bowls. Which is that going to happen?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a no, and it won't. But it's a perception thing. It's all these guys are great. And the difference between Drew Brees and Tom Brady probably is pretty thin, but it doesn't come across that way over the course of history. We're talking about how does Drew Brees look on paper, and really this is just anybody's discussion. This is barroom talk at this point. Brees within the NFL is regarded as highly as any quarterback I've ever heard about, maybe the highest, because of how mechanically sound he is and how he runs a system so precisely.
Is he underrated in the grand scheme of things, when in 10 years when we're talking about the greatest of all time, when we talk about Brady and Montana and Unitas, should Brees be in that discussion?
He won't be. I don't look. He's still quarterbacking a 7-9 team every year. So I bet my guess is he'll end up somewhere kind of in that Dan Fouts part of the discussion where everyone agrees he was prolific. He was tremendous. Dan Marino's probably the head of the Dan Fouts class of those. I guess we're talking second tier all time QBs, which is a great spot to be. Let's say there are 50 tiers, you know,
yeah,
you're on the
exactly.
second one of them. I think that's where he'll wind up.
Okay. Next question. This is coming from Paulie from Finland. It is often noted that the scheme in Washington is so great that any competent quarterback would be productive in it. So why don't other teams just copy that scheme and get results with cheap quarterbacks instead of running inferior schemes? I mean, that's a good question. Why aren't there more copycats of this Washington scheme?
Because the Washington scheme is a copycat of the New England and New Orleans scheme. They basically combine what the Patriots and the Saints do, and they make their offense. And someone does copycat Washington, and then someone's going to copycat the copycat. That cliche that it's a copycat league, cliches become true for cliches exist for a reason. They were true at some point, and they're so true that they stick around. And that's the case in this scenario. So it's what they do really well is spacing and nuance of spacing, and they must be teaching the guys really well. It's one thing to line them up in a good spot and have the routes. It's another for those guys to execute those routes exactly right, and that's what they do. So it's not just the scheme. It's the way you teach and run the scheme, and Washington's always been very good with that. I mean, you could also say Kansas City. Why don't you just copy everything Kansas City does?
Yeah.
And people do, and yeah, I wonder at times why don't more teams copy more things in the NFL, but you got to play to your players too. And if you have limitations and you have to hide a guy, Washington doesn't have to hide any offensive linemen, for example. They have a top five offensive mm-hmm. line. If you have to hide a guy, that changes your scheme a lot, and all it takes is one really bad player to have to work around.
Yeah. Next one. Peter from Sweden. Have the New England Patriots ever had an easier way to the AFC East Championship than they have this year with two rebuilding teams and a third losing its starting quarterback before the season starts? Short answer is no. They have never had it easier than this year.
And what the Patriots would tell you is there are no easy paths. And this is the NFL, and even the Jets and the Bills who are rebuilding, they've got professional athletes too. Those guys
yeah.
get paid as well. And that's true. And if the Patriots showed up and brought their F game and the Jets brought their A game, the Jets would beat them 38-20, 38-10, something like that. So it might be an easy path, but it's inherently never an easy path.
But it is kind of an easy path this year.
Other this teams, New England's path has to include Denver, Kansas City, Oakland,
yes.
Pittsburgh, Houston. That's their path always involves the whole AFC. And
yep.
AFC is better than people think this season.
You think so? I think the AFC West
yeah,
is good.
Yeah.
I don't know about the rest of it.
I think the South is – I think Houston matches up pretty well to New England, and they know them really well at this point. And their staff, of course, comes from mm-hmm. New England. And Pittsburgh's exceptionally talented. If Pittsburgh were in the NFC, they'd be everybody's Super Bowl pick.
I don't know. I do think they're exceptionally talented. I think Ben's maybe been a little too up and down for them to stay at that level. I think we have a question that coming up, actually. We'll jump on to the next question for now. This is Ian from Australia. Apart from the ever-going personnel arms race trying to get better players, is there any specific things a team can do to improve their title chances in the coming season? Things like non-coaching support staff, better sports science, buy a better team jet to get the team owner to butt out, etc. Andy, what have you heard over the years, sort of important things you can do besides just get better players, get better coaches?
The one they always talk about, and I don't engage because if you're on the outside looking in, there's no way, you'd just be guessing, is team chemistry and morale and attitude and all those human nature things. And I believe in that. I'm sure it's important. It's not for my job, though. There's nothing I can do about it.
Okay. The sports science, I mean, look, Chip Kelly's first year with the Eagles, when he brought some new injury prevention stuff, which really the whole league uses now, I mean, that was a big deal. That was a thing that gave the Eagles an edge.
Yeah. It's all this stuff's evolving, but no one's going to have a secret formula for it because there are consultants that come in and do this, and the consultants go to multiple teams and friends around the league and agents, and everyone's connected. So it's just what we're really talking about is just general evolution and how does it impact societal evolution and how does it impact the NFL? And we could go in a million directions with that.
Yeah. Let's see. Next question. This is Dirty Warrior Man. Any reason for Bills fans to be excited about the upcoming season? Seems like expectations are low in the building. Do we just let the new regime get its footing, get out from under bad contracts, look to the 2018 draft? What should Bills fans be looking for / paying attention to? No, it's not going to be a very good season in Buffalo in 2018.
Yeah, it's the second part of that question.
Excuse me, in 2017.
That's the answer.
But yeah.
Yeah,
they're,
I mean, look,
they now have six picks in the first three rounds, top 100 picks next year, so they'll get better.
Oh, it's a process. They're in the first year of their process. New GM, new head coach. They're going to have a new quarterback next year. It's you got to view this as a long-term thing.
I'm still really – the one thing that makes me scratch my head about what they've done so far, because all they've done is what a rebuilding team is doing, and they're getting value for their guys. And I guess I wouldn't be shocked if, like, a LeSean McCoy got traded or something like that. I know some people have been throwing out, do they trade Tyrod? I'm not sure there's a market for Tyrod. There wasn't a market for him when he was a free agent. And I'm just not sure what they'd bring in for him. Yeah, they traded Ronald Darby, which kind of meshes with Sean McDermott running his own heavy scheme. But they use their first round pick on a corner, Tre'Davious White, which doesn't
right.
I don't know, just doesn't really add up to me. But
reading between the lines on Peter King's column on Monday about that, because when Peter mentioned something like, "Oh, you kind of hear, you know, this guy was that," it's Peter has people that he doesn't throw out stuff at all unless he has valid ideas and people behind it. And Peter mentioned in his column, Ronald Darby wasn't buying in fully to the regime change and what they were bringing schematically. And my guess is that's the reason Ronald Darby's not there anymore.
All right. All right. Let's see. We got DG Block. In the early 90s, the run and shoot was everywhere, but was killed by the zone blitz and other pressure concepts. The experience gained from all the other pass-heavy systems that came after it. Do you think the run-and-shoot will make a comeback? And I guess, Andy, run-and-shoot would mostly be the late motion before the snap and, just a lot of sort of vertical deep routes off of that.
Yeah, and I always want, yeah, like what definition of run and shoot are we going by? Because you kind of hear different ideas of it, which is true of everything, by the way. People say West Coast offense. There's no one in the NFL just runs a system. Like, oh, we're a run and shoot team. We're a West Coast team. They don't do it that way. They have concepts, and the concepts derive from different places, and that's how everything evolves, and you do whatever works for you. That run and shoot stuff, the problem with it, the challenge with it, is that the defensive line, the athletes there are so much better than the offensive line that it's difficult to win that way. The Cowboys could probably do whatever they wanted. Their athletes could survive. But we're talking the best offensive line in the last 25 years now, and we're saying they probably could. So it all comes down to matchups in the NFL. And the most immediate matchup, the one that always takes place at the front of the snap and is therefore the most relevant every time, is the trenches, offensive line versus defensive line. And you have to account for that first if you're in offense.
There you go. Let's see. Raiders hater. I saw a PFF chart on Twitter that said Marcel Reese was the highest ranked player on the Raiders in 2012. Things happened. I got into an argument with people saying that he was their best player that year. I don't believe that a fullback can ever be the best player on a team, but the roster is pretty thin. Can a fullback ever be the best player on a team? If not, who is the Raiders' best player that year? I'll quickly bring up the Raiders' 2012 roster and throw out my opinion on that. But I think that's more of a question of, you know, who did their job the best on that team that year, and perhaps that was the fullback. And I guess that is a possibility that can happen.
Marcel Reus was great that season. He's a very versatile fullback. He's not, when you say, well, can a fullback be the most valuable? Marcel Reus isn't part of that discussion because he's not what we think of when we think of fullbacks.
Yeah.
I don't remember the 2012. I worked at Football Outsiders that year. I'm sure I saw half the Raiders games on film. I remember they finished near the bottom of the league because after the season, their defensive staff, I met with them at the Senior Bowl. They were coaching it. And you don't coach the Senior Bowl unless you, I guess, earn it the bad way by being one of the worst teams. So Marcel Reus, though, is a good player for them a long time ago. And I could see how he would rate highest on a team like that, given his diverse skill set.
Yeah, they didn't have a very good team that year. I'm looking at their roster. They just didn't have many good players. McFadden averaged 3.3 yards a rush and scored 2 touchdowns as their leading rusher. That was not a good year for the Oakland Raiders.
And Reus was not the lead blocker on a lot of McFadden's runs, if in case that's where your mind went next. Oh, they had Denarius Moore and Darius Hayward Bay. Oh, I remember that. I remember that team.
A lot of speed.
They had some limitations. A lot of speed.
It's a track team, right there.
Not a lot else. Yeah.
Andy, before we move on, a quick word from our friends from Pro Flowers. Look, there's really nothing better you can do for the special person in your life than getting him a beautiful bouquet of flowers. My Pro Flowers rose bouquet showed up the other day. My wife loved it, and on top of that, my daughter and son loved it too. So now we have a beautiful little set piece in the middle of our dining room table, and hey, it's a hit with everyone in the family. Pro Flowers wants to help you surprise someone for no reason at all while also surprising you with a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off any of their unique summer rose bouquets and get any other bouquet for $29 or more. Their colorful rainbow roses are always a hit if you aren't sure what to send someone. Pro Flowers bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. Pro Flowers gives you more bloom for your buck, big, beautiful flowers with more stems for your money. Get 20% off those summer roses or any other bouquets of $29 or more. Just go to proflowers.com and use our code THINGS at checkout. That's proflowers.com and code THINGS. Do not wait to make someone's day. All right, back to the mailbag. This next one is from João from Portugal. Sorry if I butchered your name. How do you think Brandon Cooks will affect the Patriots offense? Will they play him slot or out wide most of the time? And how would you rate his blocking ability after watching his tape, Andy?
I haven't thought much about his blocking ability. They're not an outside running team in New Orleans. They run between the tackles. So a lot of times the receiver doesn't become a point of attack blocker in that scheme. Cooks hasn't been. He still has to go block the safety, but it's an afterthought. It's not like Larry Fitzgerald in that scheme where he's down there blocking linebackers. So I don't know how he is as a blocker. He won't play the slot much because they've got Amendola and Julian Edelman there. Mm. And those are unique slot guys. Cooks is going to be a vertical player for him. He's capable of the slot. I'm sure they'll motion him in there at times and they'll do everything. But he's going to be their vertical weapon. And I think it's going to go really well.
All right. Next question. This is coming from Lars Professor. And like we said, if you had left an iTunes review, we would answer your question no matter what.
This is a bad
Lars
one,
Professor
isn't it?
Parentheses not. His question is, why is Andrew Sharp so bad at basketball analysis? Follow-up question, should Andrew Sharp quit his day job? Andrew Sharp, which, of course, he is on my go-to basketball podcast, Open Floor. I guess I would answer your question with a question, which is, what is your specific beef with Andrew Sharp? Just write to me at talkback@themmqb.com or tweet at me or Facebook me, and I just like to know. I like Andrew Sharp. I think he's good.
I think he does good work. Yeah.
Yeah. So sorry, Professor. But yeah, follow up on that. Next one's coming from Ian McPherson. Do you think it's fair that special teams players don't get to introduce themselves and their alma maters during broadcasts like the offenses and defenses do? With the rise of kickers' importance, isn't this something they should collectively bargain in the future? I'm all for that, Ian. I think it's a I think it's a rip that Justin Tucker, who, you know, basically won 4 games for the Ravens last year, doesn't get to say Justin Tucker Texas and sing it in his operatic style as he is an opera singer?
There's no way I could care any less about anything than this question right here.
Next
but
question.
Yeah, they should collectively bargain for it. That's in the next
that would be awesome.
The next set of television deals. I'm sure that's going to be at the top of the list, in fact. That and this, how they split up all the money.
Ian, I'm 100% behind you on this. Ian is asking this tongue-in-cheek, by the way, Andy. Don't, at least
well,
I...
Well, he got what he wanted then.
Almost
because
sure
I mean,
is.
I'm looking at my phone. I pulled my phone out. I'm just Googling around right now, waiting for the next question.
This is this next one's Troy Brown for president. Oh, Andy, this will hit you close to home here. This is for you. Does Andy wear a sweatshirt with his sweatpants when he travels through airports? Also, is Malcolm Butler worthy of top-tier contract? But I want to hear the sweatpants answer.
I wear a thin sweater that I wear a thin sweater, not a sweat. Sweatshirt's too much heat. And then this time of year, I wear gym shorts. And I actually bought the Michael Strahan collection of exercise shorts or athletic shorts, I guess would be a less geezerly way to say that. And they're excellent because they look like regular. They're black. They look like kind of dress shorts, but it's what I wear when I go biking. I've been wearing that on trips and feeling really good about it. So to answer the question, no, I don't wear a sweatshirt, but I don't wear sweatshirts much at all anymore. Oh, and as far as Butler, yes, pay him.
Yes, I agree. Pay Butler. Your sweater, is it the same color as your sweatpants? That's my question, because then it looks like you're wearing
your
pajamas.
They're not. And in fact, with these Strahan shorts, which I told Steve Spagnuolo about, by the way, he had no idea Michael Strahan had a clothing line, and I didn't either. So I got to be the one to tell him, because he said Strahan, I guess, is unbelievably famous. Like, he is A-list celebrity in worlds that we don't think about outside of football. And sometimes he comes to the building in New York or out there in New Jersey for the Giants just to get away from being Michael Strahan, famous celebrity guy. He just wants to be normal for a while.
I said,
your normal guy has his own clothing line now.
Yes.
but those shorts are black. And I often wear black T-shirts, which I also need to get rid of. They're the Tim Tebow T-shirt, actually. Jockey, he's on the cover when I buy the packet. But I'm buying them in packets, so that tells you what kind of T-shirt they are.
Yes.
But I don't want to wear black shorts with a black T-shirt, because then it does look like a uniform. And so now I wear a not black shirt. I wear a different shirt because I have those black shorts, and the different shirt is much nicer. So I actually look very presentable when I travel this time of year, just because I can't wear my black garbage T-shirt. During the winter, when I travel in the sweatpants, which are gray, I do wear the black T-shirt then. And the sweater is teal, which is horrendous, absolutely horrendous.
I just want to point out, you would not spend even 10 seconds addressing the special teams question, but you just spent 14 minutes breaking down your airport wardrobe. And I think I begrudgingly respect that. I'll say that.
Well, because I told you, when I started wearing sweatpants, 5 out of 8 trips, I saw NFL coaches in the airport, which I've never seen. So then I bought nice sweatpants. Since I bought the nicer sweatpants, which, by the way, shrunk, and now they don't even go down to my ankles, so I can't even wear them. They look horrendous. I haven't seen a coach since, though. And since I started wearing the Strahan shorts with a nicer shirt, still haven't seen a coach at all. So it's only when I'm wearing my trashy sweatpants that I see people I know in the NFL.
Well, this has been the Sweatpants Hour with Andy Benoit. Next question here. This is from Homiek. How do you handle the Vikings quarterback situation with Bradford being a free agent next year and Bridgewater's injury making him an unknown? I think they got to keep Bradford at this point. I mean, they got time to figure it out.
Yeah.
But yeah,
we need to see how he plays this season. This is his first full year here. They've now got the offense kind of, I don't want to say tailored to him, but it's built around him. He's now their full quarterback. Bridgewater, and I'm sorry, it's done, though. I mean, maybe you re-sign him as a backup. I didn't think Bridgewater was a great starter before the injury. I wanted him to be. I like him. They love him in Minnesota. But that's going to be a career lost, I fear. And
yeah.
They probably got a little bit lucky, though, because he really wasn't the quarterback that people thought he was. and that was not someone that was going to be pleasant to invest long term in.
Well, he had a ceiling with the. I mean, look, he doesn't have the arm. That's what it comes
he's
down to.
He's not even close with the arm. Strength. Yeah, he's not. Right, limits he's not close do. With the arm.
Yep. But yeah, the other thing to keep in mind with Bradford, I mean, they not only did he come in at the last minute last year, but they had to completely revamp the offense midseason when they lost all their offensive linemen, and now they have reinforced the offensive line. So now you can, you know, presumably run the same offense or similar offense for 16 games here, unlike last season. So even better.
Right.
Let's see, SoCal Bears guy. Andy, what have you seen in the very limited tape of Kevin White from last season? I'm sure most non-Bears fans have forgotten him, but Chicago could really use something approaching his potential, as it was talked about 2 years ago. So what do you think about Kevin White right now?
I hope he was hurt when he was on the field last year, because if he wasn't, he's not going to last in the NFL. He couldn't run. Didn't run well at all. Very sluggish. So let's hope it was the injuries he was battling. That's what they're hoping there.
No. This is Doggy Dog 14. If Aaron Rodgers only wins one Super Bowl in Green Bay, will it be viewed as a failure on him and his legacy as one of the GOAT QBs, or the Packers organization as a whole for not supplying him with a consistent defense? And this is Doggy Dog admits he is a Vikings fan. It's more legacy talk, but I would think it would be a big disappointment if Aaron Rodgers retires with only one ring. I don't know who you put it on. I think you'd put it more on the organization, I guess, because Rodgers has been so good, but it's also just some bad luck.
Nobody talks about this. Like, he's not nobody. That's the question. I'm surprised it doesn't come up more. And I'm not saying it's a great premise anyway. I don't get into like, well, he's got three rings, so he's better than the guy with two rings, and that's all about championships. I understand that's why you play, but that's really remedializing the conversation when you do that. Brett Favre won a title in like his third or fourth year as a starter. Can you imagine what his career would be viewed as if he never won that Super Bowl? He'd be the guy that threw the NFC Championship interceptions, the gunslinger that never got tamed. He'd be like Jay Cutler and Tony Romo rolled into one. Perception-wise, Cutler, undisciplined. Romo, postseason choker, fourth quarter choker. Wasn't true, but that's what people said. That would be Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers is kind of... He got the same break. He won his title in his, I believe, his third year as a starter, maybe fourth as well, 2010. And so now there's no pressure on. Nobody talks about Green Bay's lack of success in the postseason, which is what it's amounted to. They haven't been back to the Super Bowl. So these guys, these Packer QBs, they won a championship early in their career. They were great talents. That set the narrative, and that's what they stayed as. They were never viewed as anything less. There hasn't been pressure on them. Nobody talks about Favre now as a guy that nobody says, hey, Favre only won one championship, one Super Bowl. He lost two NFC championships with overtime or near overtime interceptions. Nobody talks about that with Brett Favre.
Yeah, no, it's the other thing with Rodgers is I didn't realize it. I mean, he's going to be 34 this year. He's some like 8 months younger than Jay Cutler, and everyone was kind of like, oh, well, Jay Cutler, he's retiring a little bit young, but hey, he's 34, so this is, you know, when they push him out. I mean, obviously, you see with Brady, guys can play into their late 30s now.
Rodgers' mileage is different. Rodgers, remember, Cutler got beat around bad at Vanderbilt. Yeah. So he came into the NFL as a beaten up prospect, and then he got beaten up early in his career and it stayed that way. Rodgers has not taken a bunch of hits. He sat out the first three seasons and he moved around in college and was not the guy getting hit for four straight years there or whatever it was with Cutler. So different mileage on those guys too. But yeah, Rodgers is getting up there in age. You're right. Hasn't shown yet. It hasn't shown at all, but at some point it will.
Yeah. Next question here. This is LTash 96. He's asking just me specifically for some reason, so shut it, Andy. Where would Gary play Malik McDowell on the Seahawks line, and where do you think the Seahawks will play Malik on the line? Obviously he had the ATV accident, and who knows how much we'll see of him this year. I thought McDowell was a straight up three technique coming out of Michigan State, Andy, but you didn't see him at all, did you? I don't think he would have popped up on any of the quarterback film you watched this offseason.
No, I don't know. I don't know about Malik McDowell. I hope he gets healthy, though. I was sad to hear about his accident.
Yeah, I thought he was straight up three technique. It was in Lance Zierlein. I saw had compared him to Ziggy Ansah, which is obviously a little bit of a different player. So maybe the Seahawks have something different in mind for him. But coming into the draft, I thought he was a straight three technique, one gap penetrator. And we'll see how they use him. It looks like it's going to be him and Frank Clark are sort of going to be the heir apparents to the Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill guys over the next couple of years here. Let's grab one more here, Andy. This is from NDSU Nick. If you could add a quarterback to the Broncos roster, how far down the list do you have to drop before the Broncos are no longer considered Super Bowl contenders? So basically, what level quarterback do the Broncos have where you say they're no longer a serious threat to the Patriots in the AFC? I think you have to go pretty far down there. I mean, I think the guys they have now are kind of right on the cusp, and they don't have a great situation at the moment.
You'd have to have a quarterback who's actively bad, and I don't want to name guys that I think are actively bad. These are professional athletes.
Oh, that was it? I thought you were going to end that with however. I will throw out some names.
No, because however, then I'd have to name it, and I know what happens when you name these guys, and it's not fair. At the end of the show like this, in a hypothetical question, that's not fair to them.
Well, do you think with the situation they have there, I'd consider them contenders. I think if they can get the Patriots in the playoffs, I think that's a team that can knock off the Patriots because of the defense. And look, it's two young guys, so who knows what they have. They hope they have something in one of them.
And I thought Simeon had I thought he showed some nice stuff last year. Needs to be more accurate on a consistent band or more consistently accurate. But he was not the reason they lost last season. The lack of a running game was. And that comes back to Simeon a little bit. He needs a running game to be in order to be successful. He's not a QB that's going to just lead an offense with 350 yards a week passing. But I thought it was a decent first year for that guy. And I would hope he starts this season because there might be something to build on there.
All right, that is a wrap for Mailbag 4, Mailbag with a Vengeance. Stay tuned. We got one more coming up next week. It'll be Mailbag 5, Weekend at Mailbags. And like I keep saying, if you sent an iTunes review question, we will answer it. For now, thank you as always to producer Lou Pellegrino and editor Chris Basil, the guys at Digital Media, best in the business, making us sound good. Most of all, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best. The questions have been fantastic. Thank you so much for participating in the show and making it better. Andy and I, as always, want to hear from you. You can get us on Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GGrambling_SI. We are both on Facebook, or you can email in to talkback@themmqb.com. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and of course, this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys, Mailbag 5, next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.